I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Scott Schober, CEO of Berkeley Veritronics and author of the new book, Senior Cyber, Best Security Practices for Your Golden Years. You can find Scott's new book on Amazon as well as through his website, scottschober.com. Welcome, Scott. It's great to have you on the show.
Hey, great to be here, Hillary. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. So, Scott, congratulations on the new book. I have it. It's fantastic. Couldn't come at a better time.
Yes, I think it's the timing of it certainly helps. I'm constantly barraged by many people, not just seniors, but oftentimes those that are supporting seniors and getting questions and phone calls and saying, help me, how do I get on the internet? And how do I make my computer and phone work? And I think a lot of kids of age parents appreciate tips and some of the things that we share in Senior Cyber.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like how you start off the book. You set a really great scene for why seniors are so heavily targeted. So for our listeners who haven't yet read or may be unaware, could you start off by helping set that scene for us a little bit here as well?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I learned, and I always focused more dealing with, you know, Fortune 500 companies, small businesses, and then more and more with consumers, that seniors are kind of that part of the conversation that's often left out. And the more I realized it, the more and more I heard about different scams and attacks that are targeting specifically seniors. And I started asking myself, why? And what I've learned quickly is that seniors are often targeted because they tend to be trusting. They also tend to be a little bit more polite and patient as a hacker is trying to fool them and get information, and socially engineer, get information out of them. They're polite, they're courteous. They're trusting. They also typically have better soundness of mind when it comes to financial things. And what do I mean by that? They already have an established savings account. They've been saving all their lives. Maybe they own their own home. They probably have decent credit, which again, makes them very attractive for scammers so they could be targeted. And in addition, I quickly learned that seniors are less likely to report fraud because, well, either one, they're a little intimidated and they don't know how, or perhaps even they're a little bit embarrassed or ashamed that they fell victim to a scammer. So there's a lot of reasons that I think seniors are continually targeted as far as cybercrime and scams. And I think oftentimes, too, that they don't even have a comfortable feeling how to explain what happened. So if there is an investigation, if it was reported, how do they explain to the law enforcement personnel, well, I made the mistake here, I did this or did that, because they're not comfortable with the tech jargon dealing with the internet and computers and smartphones and how they were compromised.
That makes sense. Thank you. And, you know, it's overwhelming.
It is.
At any age.
And it's sad. It shouldn't be because, I try to share this throughout the book, that seniors are actually very wise. They have life lessons that they could share with younger generations. So their experience really can help them. But some of the good qualities that they have, the hackers are actually working against them. The fact that they're innocent, the fact that they're trusting again and again, that seems to come into play with all these different scams that they're targeted for.
Right. And I'm glad that you brought that up so we could help destigmatize that, because we definitely need to keep in mind that these criminals, and you go through this really well in the book, but they're extremely skilled. They're constantly evolving. They don't have restrictions on them. So they have, you know, no boundaries, nothing to, no frameworks to stay within. And so they're extremely skilled at creating very reputable and legitimate looking communications to fish, et cetera, which we'll get into in a little bit, but it's definitely not as if elderly folks aren't sharp enough.
Exactly.
So now that we've held, and also you started off with a statistic about how in 2018, there was about 36 billion per year in fraud against the elderly, which I found absolutely staggering.
Yeah. And I think the part that's so concerning is that this is assuming that it's reported. In other words, as I brought up that other point earlier, why are seniors so targeted? Because they don't report it. So right. What does that tell you? It's probably certainly underestimated that number there. And now we look a couple years later, that number keeps heading up vertically, and it's going to be alarming because there are a lot of seniors, especially in the United States. If you look at the number now that are seniors, the number that are part of AARP and other senior organizations, and just the fact that statistically seniors are living longer. People are living longer, so they have more time, and there's more medicines and advances, which I think are fabulous to keep people healthy and going. But at the same time, that's a growing statistic there. That pool of people that are going to be targeted will continue to grow. So I think the fact that they need to be educated, encouraged, empowered, so they can feel comfortable, so they can use a computer, that they don't have to live in fear of doing things that are going on in a modern society. That's really important.
Absolutely. And what are some of the top scams that we're currently seeing for senior folks?
Well, I would say one of them that stands out toward the top of my list, and there is a long list. We would need probably a couple hours to dive into all of them, to be honest with you. But I think a lot of them tie into timing of things and world events and things. And one comes to mind, certainly the pandemic that we're all in with vaccine scams. And in the recent couple weeks even, there's many scams that have flooded Facebook and a couple other social media platforms as well, but predominantly Facebook, which I find interesting, with various COVID-19 scams. And a lot of times, why? Because if you look at the way the demographics are and who uses that platform, I mean, Facebook obviously has a billion plus users, very successful, but many of the younger generation have shifted gears away from that. And they've migrated away from Facebook to Instagram, to TikTok, and to a lot of these other social media apps. However, Facebook still is growing as far as the user base that is seniors. And therefore, that is a very effective way for scammers to use that platform there. And there are a lot of different ways. A lot of the scams are actually, people are waiting in line. People have called or emailed. These are seniors waiting to find out when they can get the vaccine. And knowing that there's a limited vaccine supply, they will get alerted through Facebook, through Messenger, or get an email. And these scams will really lead them in to get them to compromise further personal information besides just their name. And that's a big concern, because when they're using the emotional aspect of something, so they're trying to socially engineer and pull little bits of information by building trust and fooling the senior, and the emotional side is thinking about, I got to get this vaccine. My son or daughter told me, don't fool around, get this. They're a high risk, perhaps. Maybe they have underlying conditions. So their mindset is very focused on their health, and it should be. However, cyber criminals are using that to their advantage to really scam them. So Facebook is the primary means, these different Facebook groups where they're trying to prey on elderly. And then maybe second is Telegram, different types of chats and things that are going on. So I think seniors really need to look out for that as far as any type of vaccine scam where they're promised something. Do your homework. Ask your son or your daughter if you're not sure. Pick up the phone and make a phone call to verify the information, because you can get lost in all the different information that is out there, certainly on Facebook and really the internet as a whole. Should I take Pfizer? Should I take Moderna? What about AstraZeneca? Your head will start spinning. And again, you'll get caught up in the emotional aspect of it, and you'll click on the wrong thing. You'll give away the wrong information, and you'll fall victim to a cyber criminal.
Right. Yeah, that's really tough. It's so unfortunate to hear. And talking about clicking on the wrong thing, that makes me think of phishing, which is also, you know, a large way that cyber criminals are targeting elderly folks. And some of the tactics that they're using are just, I mean, incredible is the wrong word. Impressive is the wrong word, but I guess sophisticated would be a better word or more appropriate, at least.
I agree. And they're really well thought out phishing scams that have surfaced that do, in fact, fool a lot of people. And the part that's interesting is the other areas where seniors are also targeted. I notice in each one weaves in phishing emails as part of the method that's the most effective to defraud them out of something. So in like health insurance fraud, Medicare fraud, prescription drugs, phishing emails are effectively used throughout those type of hacking campaigns. There's funeral and cemetery scams. Again, phishing emails often come into play with that, where they could fool people, investment scams, IRS scams. Mm-hmm. The list seems to go on, and all of them have that common component, whereas phishing emails seem to be at the top of the list. Then maybe following that might be phone calls, and texts are not as prevalent. But again, some seniors do use texting, so it is also used. But I think understanding and educating seniors to what a phishing email really is important. And I try to spend a little bit of time in the book describing that, and then also showing some examples. So it's not this mysterious thing that they can't relate to. But once you can relate something, hopefully through stories, through illustrations and simple examples, it will really sound it down into a senior's mind. So if and when they're on their computer and they're checking their email, they'll stop, they'll pause, they'll look carefully at the email and analyze the components of it enough to say, hey, this might be questionable, let me not proceed. Or no, I was expecting this email. I know who it's from. I know the source. I know the sender. It's safe to continue on here. So a lot of investigative work, unfortunately, has to be done. And seniors are not alone. Phishing emails are really one of the single most successful things when cyber criminals are targeting anyone. It could be universities. It could be government agencies. It could be cybersecurity companies. We all fall victim to phishing emails. So it's important to stay educated on that.
And you also touch in the book upon how seniors are, you know, they need to protect themselves not only online, but also they're in real life, such as you gave an example of social security numbers at doctor's offices and things like that.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to trust also, because you bring up a great point, Hillary. And I share in the book, when I went to the doctor and I wasn't asked if I could provide, I was told I had to provide my social security number so I could be treated. And sometimes when something's put forth very authoritative, or services will be denied or you think they'll be denied, you just kind of follow suit and you say, hey, I'm sick. I need this test, whatever. I better fill it out. I don't want to be denied coverage or be denied being seen by the doctor. But we have to be careful and not take everything again just because somebody behind the desk said they said it. You can ask them. And then that's what I did. I just said, well, wait a second. I said, why do you need this social security number? Is that a requirement? And then they pushed it and came back to me and said, yeah, we require that to see you. I said, well, what if I don't give it to you? Well, hold on, let me ask. And then they came back and said, well, just give me the last four digits of your social security number. And I said, no, I don't need to do that. What are you going to do with this paper when it's done? Oh, well, we make a copy of it. We put it in the file up here, and the girl takes it home as well. And then she enters it into our computer database. And I'm thinking, wait a second, now my social security number and all these patients' social security numbers are on a hard copy there, hard copy that the girl takes home. Then it gets in a soft copy on her work at home computer. So now it's in three different spots. Are those shredded? Is it destroyed at some point? Where does it end up? Does it get thrown into the garbage and now somebody finds it when they do a little dumpster diving? Who knows? But for those type of very basic reasons, it's really important to ask, question before you're willing to hand out any personal information. I mean, really the social security number in particular, what's a little troubling is it really wasn't designed to be a means of uniquely identifying a person. That wasn't the purpose of it when it first came out and we got our little blue Social Security cards. But yet we've kind of, as a society, have adopted Social Security numbers as a means of authentication to say, hey, this is uniquely Scott Schober. And that's not really its intended use or purpose. So why do we keep doing it? So I always say, hold that near and dear to you. If there's seniors, many of which I'm sure are listening to this, don't be too quick to give out your Social Security number, period. Keep that guarded.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, even for myself, my husband and I, we just refinanced our house because rates are lower. So why not? And when the bank would call us, the first thing they would ask is for the last four of our social. I mean, you're calling me. what? No. <Yeah.
laughs> And I find that troubling. A lot of times when you take the initiative to do whatever it is, you're taking out a new credit card or refinancing your home, buying a car, whatever. And then the person on the other side grills you with many, many, many security questions. I had that recently and I was a little taken back. And I said to the person on the other end, and I said, do you really require all this information? And they said, well, this is for your security, sir. And I said, well, how do I know what you're going to do with that information after you write it down or type it into your terminal? Well, you could trust us. We're the bank. And I said, well, no, not really. I'm not going to give you that. And to my surprise, they said, okay, can we ask you a different question, a different security related question that at least validates your authentication, who you are? And I said, yeah, sure. And they did. And it wasn't anything that was top secret.
Yeah.
But it connected me. And I said, you know what? That tells me right away, question everything. Don't be too quick to give out that personal information. Could come back to haunt you.
Absolutely. And so I think that's a nice segue into next question, which is, and I feel like you've touched upon this throughout our conversation, but to summarize, how can folks help protect their loved ones? What are some best practices you'd recommend, cyber hygiene habits, et cetera?
Well, it's a great question. And I think number one thing to do is to have the conversation. And I think, unfortunately, and again, personally, I've experienced this, and I share some of this again in the book, with the loss of my grandfather recently, with both my parents aging and going through several different major health issues. If you don't sit down and have the conversations, and what do I mean by that? It's conversations about things as silly as passwords, financial conversations, inheritance, who's going to clean the house out, where are we going to bury you, all those different types of questions. A lot of people tend to put that off.
Right.
Until it may be a little bit too late. Well, in that mix, there should be cybersecurity questions also. And usually toward the top of that list is passwords. You know, they might have a key to a safety deposit box. Do they have a list of documented passwords that are locked away? Most likely, I find seniors don't use password managers. They're not comfortable with keychain passwords on computers. Not all, but most are not. So they might have a physical password written down. So is that locked away somewhere, at least a copy of it, so the survivor can then go and access these accounts and properly close them down? Is really an important conversation to have, I think. And then I like to personally share, and I personally do this with my parents even. I share specific things with them, and you don't want to ram it through all at once, but you want to give them friendly reminders about unsolicited phone calls, things that come in the mail, somebody that knocks on the door, door-to-door type of service or an offering, how they have to use extreme caution there so they don't get duped, so they don't let the person in the home so they could canvass the house, so they could perform a physical robbery at a later time. And a lot of times, older ones are very innocent. They don't think about those things. I always also ask the question about, do you have some good, reputable antivirus software? Is there a firewall set up? Do they understand the basics of what malware is, how that could be initiated from a phishing email, and start to connect the dots? And I think that's really where the conversations start, when they understand it. And if you spend some time with them as they're using the computer, you'll notice that. Maybe you'll see your aged parent or your grandparent on a browser, and all of a sudden a pop-up comes up. Do you ask them, wait a second, Do you understand what that is? Do you understand why it's dangerous to click on that? What that could lead to? Do you understand why it's dangerous to just download all these different apps on your smartphone? I'm amazed. Some seniors I've seen, and they've got hundreds of apps on their smartphone.
Wow.
I'm cautious. I have a lot less than that. I've got about 20 key apps that I actively use. And my rule of thumb is if after a month I don't use a particular app, I delete it.
Yeah.
I get it off my device. I get it off my laptop. And that's another thing too, helping them understand it's important sometimes to house clean, clean things out. I was helping somebody recently and I asked, when's the last time you cleaned out your trash box, you deleted your emails? And they say, oh, I do it occasionally. I said, well, how often? Well, I don't remember. And I looked and they had emails that they received, and it was well over a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
Since they last deleted it. Now, again, if there's any suspicious files, malware on there that could be used for a ransomware attack or something else that are sitting there dormant that can then activate, that could be dangerous. So again, just the very basic keeping house, I think is very important, having those conversations that will really help them be alert and be aware. And that way they can tell you if you're a son or a daughter or somebody that's providing support or caregiving or whatever else. And then also, I think having the conversation at some point, if you are a victim of some type of cyber crime, not to be afraid to report it. And that may be beyond just immediate family members, but it could be a local FBI field office that you could submit a tip online and let them know, because they're very active FBI with the Internet Crime Complaint Center, and they'll actually follow up on these complaints. And what they're going to ask you, unfortunately, is a lot of details. You know, they're going to say, well, how did they contact you? What's your name? You know, did you respond to the email or the text or the mail that you received? Did you actually send them funds or give them your credit card information? So again, that conversation may be a bit embarrassing if they kind of incriminated themselves. But I think it's important to help seniors realize, hey, if you are a victim, it's important to report it. The more people that report it, the better the FBI will get and the less cybercrime there will be out there. And the FBI does an excellent job at trying to handle this enormous amount of complaints that do come in, but it gives you a fighting chance to beat the hackers and the cyber criminals when it is properly reported.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. Well, Scott, it's been so great having you on the show and talking about this important subject. And I'm so glad that you wrote this book for folks.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And I really do thank the time that you took and appreciate the wonderful questions also there. And I do have a level of confidence that if seniors do take the time to at least get educated and learn some of the best practices, they can enjoy the internet, they can enjoy computers, they can enjoy technology, and hopefully they can embrace it and not live in fear of cyber criminals. So thank you again, and appreciate everything everybody's doing there at Cybercrime Magazine.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Scott Schober, CEO of Berkeley Veritronics and author of the new book, Senior Cyber, Best Security Practices for Your Golden Years. You can find Scott's new book on Amazon as well as through his website, scottschober.com. And you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.